This is retired Fire Chief Tom DeSourcy, and you're listening to Firefighting in Canada, the podcast, brought to you by VFIS of Canada, a division of CVIS Incorporated, Canada's largest insurer of firefighters since 1991.
Stepping into a new role in the fire service can be challenging, especially moving into a chief's position. Well, not to mention when that position is with the largest fire department in Canada. It's the case for my guest today, Jim Jessup, who has nearly 30 years of experience in firefighting, emergency response, and fire safety management, is formerly the deputy fire chief and director of operations training and technical operations for the Toronto Fire Service, and joins us from the big city today. Chief, welcome. Welcome, Jim. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Where did it all begin 30 years ago? With the city of Toronto, right?
It did. It actually started May 21st, 1996, when I started as a recruit in the pre-amalgamated Toronto Fire Department. And lo and behold, almost 30 years later, I have was recently unanimously appointed by Toronto City Council as the next fire chief.
That time, that firefighter 30 years ago, did that firefighter think, I could be the chief?
Absolutely not. I was following in my father's footsteps, who had spent 30 years in downtown Toronto, out of the oldest fire station in the city at on Yorkville. And my dream at that point was literally to be a captain, candidly, on his truck where he had retired as captain on at Pumper 10 at the time. So that was my ambition at the time after getting on, was to get into a station, to his old station, to work with his crews and you know, ultimately to become a captain like he had. And certainly if you would ask me back in 1996, if I would have been appointed the fire chief of Toronto, I would never have believed it.
What about the rest of those years? Where else did you find yourself in the fire service?
Well, I moved around a little bit. So in 2001, I moved to the city of Niagara Falls, the Niagara Falls Fire Service, where candidly, had I not done that, I would not be talking to you today. A number of things happened there. So I spent about 9 months on the trucks at the time, and Niagara Falls ended up with a new fire chief back in end of 2001, early 2002, give or take. And that fire chief was Pat Burke, who became certainly not only a dear friend of mine to this day, but certainly a mentor to me in the fire service, and someone I, you know, would not be sitting across from you today. And I will vividly recall Pat saying to me one day that the fire service is not all about fire trucks. And he had a vision in Niagara Falls to lead Ontario in terms of fire prevention and code enforcement. He basically suggested I apply, join the fire prevention division. And I did that. Ended up spending a number of years there, implemented his vision in terms of enforcement of the fire code and certainly the corresponding impacts to both public and firefighter safety. And at the same time, was approached by the then city manager, John McDonald, who said, I should start considering additional post-secondary education if I want to continue a promotion. So very, very pivotal for me, those 12 years there. Lee Smith, I will always give credit for, was the fire chief that took a shot on me and hired me as the deputy chief, literally from a fire inspector. So I left Niagara Falls in and around 2012, went to London, the city of London, for a little over a year. Again, great experiences there, fantastic staff, both there and in Niagara Falls. Ended up meeting another person that had a huge, you know, impact on my career, albeit a short time, but certainly a high impact. And that was the commissioner at the time, Lynn Livingston, who certainly taught me how to be people focused, especially in managing not only union staff, but certainly non-union staff. And I will forever be grateful for her. Ended up going to the office of the fire marshal first as deputy fire marshal and then as the fire marshal of Ontario. Again, it's all about the people you work with, and worked with two great deputy ministers, Ian Davidson, and Matt Turigian. That again expanded my experience and exposure. And then back in 2015, returned to Toronto Fire Service as a Deputy Chief of Fire Prevention under Fire Chief Sales. And then in and around 2019, Chief Pegg walked into my office and strongly suggested I take over the operations portfolio as another opportunity to expand my skill set. So that's kind of the brief history of how I ended up talking with you today.
You know, we've all seen a lot of change in the fire service over the years. Has there been any changes in the last 30 that have taken you either by surprise or you think are the most outstanding?
Certainly, I think one of the bigger changes, was a direct result of the work of Chief Burke at the time, both as the chief of Niagara Falls and then when he was Fire Marshal of Ontario. And that was actually holding people accountable for violations of the fire code that were willful, that were reckless, and that resulted in either civilian and or firefighter injuries. Prior to Pat, leading that charge, the fire service never really enforced the fire code. It was always, let's hold a fundraiser when four people die and there's no smoke alarms. And Pat was instrumental in changing that lens, as he used to say to me, that we are the police officers of the fire code, especially in Ontario. So that was a dramatic shift in culture that we're still, trying to push today. And I would say the other major change I have seen personally, again, going back to watching my dad respond in this, from the 70s on when I was born, is the change in personal protective equipment that our staff have. It's no longer the raincoats and the orange rubber gloves and the boots. We have the top of the line personal protective equipment for our staff. And given the combustibles today and the time to flash over, they certainly require it. So I would say certainly the culture regarding fire code enforcement and the dramatic improvements to personal protective equipment, cancer prevention, occupational stress injury, that proactive piece to firefighter well-being is the second major thing I've seen.
You are stepping obviously into a new role, or are you? I mean, you've been the acting fire chief for a while. You had the opportunity during COVID to be involved in certainly budget work. So that must be a plus to have that ahead of you.
It really is. So obviously when Chief Pegg had assumed the role of COVID-19 incident commander, he had placed me in as the acting fire chief for just probably under 2 years. And, it gave me the experience. I led the 2020 and 2021 capital operating budgets, did a lot of work with the association at the time, was responsible for, a number of key reports that increased the number of firefighters, that ended up hiring our first full-time staff psychologist with Chris Rodriguez. So, the ability to lead Toronto Fire during that time period, but also candidly during probably the most challenging time period in the department's history, during a declared emergency, during the pandemic, during the incredible challenges we had staffing fire trucks with the Omicron and the vacancies and the quarantine rules, and working with the association on trying to basically keeping the machine running and working with just an incredible staff. So that experience certainly and exposing me and introducing me to all of the key senior leadership members and corporate leadership members and city councilors at the time will certainly serve me well, in my new role.
I think the COVID experience, if you will, for the fire service, it brought in a lot of, I guess, positive change in a lot of departments. We carried on a lot of the procedures and protocols, and I think we are a little bit better for it, or would you agree?
Certainly at the time, as I said, absolutely the most challenging time that, obviously the world had seen. What I will say locally in Toronto is it really forced us and it really gave Toronto Fire the opportunity to shine and become the architects of how. Again, we were instrumental in the vaccination program. We were instrumental in dealing with individuals experiencing homelessness and how do we assist Toronto Public Health in getting vaccines out there. We were running vaccine clinics at the time. Our staff were, because of their experience, with the incident command system. So certainly, learning how to not say no, We were presented a number of challenges by Chief Pegg at the time and by Mayor Tory on how can we get this done? And we found ways. So certainly that spirit and that innovation and ingenuity is something that has carried forward with Toronto Fire. And I think also, candidly, a greater awareness, of exposures and of the role that we play, not only responding to fires, but being the frontline responders for all types of emergencies really was highlighted during the pandemic.
We alluded to the fact that Toronto is the largest fire department in Canada. I don't know that people know how large. throw out some numbers at us.
Certainly. So, currently we have over 3,200 staff. And that encompasses obviously just over 2,700 frontline firefighters, our inspectors, our communication staff, our mechanics, our human resources and finance staff, our training staff. I'm probably missing other divisions. We have 85 full-time fire stations, 125 fire trucks. We have two fire boats. We have a number of both provincial and national teams. So we have the provincial CBRNE team. We're part of the City of Toronto Public Order Unit team with Toronto Police Service and Toronto Paramedics. Obviously, we have CAN TF3, one of the Canadian Heavy Urban Search and Rescue teams, and a number of other special teams that we have been working on in collaboration with Toronto Paramedics and Toronto Police over the last number of years in response to the threat and risk assessments that we are candidly that we have to deal with in the City of Toronto. So it is a very large and complex organization, but we are absolutely blessed to have it led by incredible staff and experienced staff that have been here for decades and decades, that have experience that no other service really has had the opportunity to get. And that is why it runs so well. And being able to serve, as I said, over 3,200 frontline staff in total that keep this machine running and keep the over 3 million residents of the City of Toronto safe.
The Canadian Association of Fire Chiefs recently released their census numbers, annual survey that is done within the industry. And it's not surprising that the available personnel numbers are down. The amount of money available to budgets is down. And certainly the need for fire apparatus is up. And the number of departments that have aging apparatus and equipment. In the smaller departments, it affects them in one way. What about the large departments? What about the metro? What about Toronto? Faced with the same challenges, are you?
Well, I will say this. We have been and are blessed with a very supportive senior leadership team, deputy city manager, and city council and mayor. Over the last number of years, we've actually had council approval to increase the number of frontline firefighters by 156 net new. We have received council permission and authorization for our capital asset management fleet replacement program. We are actually taking possession of our brand new fireboat in the next 2 weeks. So by the spring, it will be protecting Lake Ontario along the William Lyon Mackenzie. So we've done a lot of work with City Council and the senior leadership team, and there have been significant investments that Council has approved so that we are constantly replacing our fleet. We've been able to increase the number of staff because of our vacancy challenges, the challenges we're facing with WSIB, and a number of other reasons why we are struggling sometimes to maintain staffing. And in addition to that, council has also been very supportive of our overtime and our callback program to make sure that we have enough fire trucks available to respond. So I can't say enough about the support we've had. Had it not been for their support, certainly we would be facing some of the challenges that you've just described.
And on the topic of challenges, certainly a large city like Toronto is dealing with a very diverse community. How do you as a fire service deal with or respond to varying languages and cultures? Are you able to meet that demand?
A really great question. I mean, we are the most diverse and the most vertical city in North America. One of the statistics that constantly shocks me is we have more cranes in the sky today than all other U.S. cities combined. And so obviously poses challenges that that we will be facing and planning for and responding to in the next number of years. And, you know, that is everything from, to your point, you know, we respond, we're called to respond to, you know, individuals facing, you know, person in crisis, mental health challenges, addiction issues. So, you know, certainly, you know, our staff are put in the position to respond to those types of calls of people that, you know, candidly are suffering from addiction and poverty and unhoused. Similarly, we respond to, you know, some of the richest individuals in the country, you know, up in the bridal path and some of these large mega mansions. And in terms of, you know, the diversity of the city, that is our city's motto, that diversity is our strength. And that has been reflective in all of the incredible work our team has done on, you know, making sure that our recruitment and outreach efforts continue so that, you know, our service reflects the city we serve. Our last number of classes, those that self-identify from an equity deserving group exceed over 40%. So incredible work done there. And then similarly with the challenges, you know, we are very unique with our vertical challenges. And, you know, we have two dedicated high-rise trucks right now. We are fighting fires now upwards of 100 stories in the air. We've had a number of crane collapses over the last 18 months to 2 years. So, you know, innovation and constantly reviewing and looking industry-wide for our comparables across the world in terms of dealing with these challenges in these large buildings, these super tall buildings, is something that, you know, we take very seriously, and we are continuing to adapt.
Clearly, you have a spot that you want to be. And I mean, you are where you are right now, and you talk about some of the challenges. What are the goals in the coming years? What's missing? What's left out right now?
Well, it's funny. I was asked that question in one of my interviews, and you know, one of the things that both you know, TFS and the Toronto Professional Firefighters Association, we speak often about, and that is the number of cancer line of duty death funerals that we attend. It seems like every month I'm sitting beside or have sat beside, you know, the president or the vice president, either in my former role as deputy or, you know, my current role now as the fire chief. And those are gut wrenching and those are terrible. And they literally are devastating to our team. And, you know, we are not going to be able to reverse what the previous firefighters were exposed to back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Now we're seeing the long-term effects of that. We actually buried one of our youngest active firefighters this year, last July, who had just turned 50, and that devastated our service. So if I had one goal, it would be 20 years from now, whoever's sitting in this seat would be able to say, you know what, cancer line of duty death funerals, I don't have to go to them, or they're dramatically reduced. And so we are investing significant amounts of money and resources and time in trying to reduce the cancer exposures to our frontline staff, you know, along the same lines of the investments we're making in, you know, in mental health supports for all of our staff, not just the frontline firefighters, but certainly our communication staff, our fire investigators, and so forth and so on. So that primarily, the well-being of my staff, without question, is the number one goal for me, along with making sure that, you know, we continually evolve and can protect the citizens of the fourth largest city in North America. You know, we had just finished the Taylor Swift concerts back in November, a massive undertaking, you know, on a global scale. We are well into the planning for FIFA 2026. Working very closely with Toronto paramedics and Toronto police, the threat and risk assessments that this city has to deal with, from protests, you know, to large scale events, is really unprecedented. So making sure that we are able to respond, that we're prepared, that our staff are trained, that they have the equipment they require to respond to the calls that we're going to ask them to do is certainly another top priority.
Our listeners are fire chiefs, our firefighters, our future fire chiefs, possibly. In closing today, I want you to maybe offer some words of encouragement and advice to those that that are facing the budget challenges, facing the health challenges in their department, no matter the size. And I think that if you could offer any advice to those firefighters, those future chiefs, what would it be?
One of the greatest piece of advices I received years ago was not to try to do this alone. One of Toronto Fire Service's greatest strengths and a commitment that I publicly make is our relationship with the Toronto Professional Firefighters Association. We are stronger when we are together. There is not a major decision made in the Toronto Fire Service without seeking input, from the association. And it is something that I probably do daily over the last 9 years, is speaking to, executive members, and certainly our current president, James Reed. He shares the same commitment. So certainly making sure that you build that strong relationship with your association in the career services is something that has proved completely invaluable to me personally, and certainly to the success of the Toronto Fire Service. From a whole perspective, it is realizing that you can't do it all alone. Seeking advice. I have a very close circle of friends, mentors and peers, most of them whom I had just mentioned, that I call pretty much anytime there's a major complex decision I have to make, and I want their input, and I seek different points of view. And I think that is candidly a sign of strength, is to realize that, you don't have all the answers. You're not going to be able to do this job and solve all these complex problems on your own, and to surround yourself with a group of individuals that you trust that are going to tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear.
Chief, congratulations once again, and thanks for doing this today.
Thank you very, very much. Wishing you all the best.
This has been Firefighting in Canada, the podcast. Brought to you by VFIS of Canada, a division of CVIS Incorporated, Canada's largest insurer of firefighters since 1991. Visit firefightinginCanada.com for more episodes.